everybody. I'm Steve Bordner. I'm an alcoholic. I could just sit there and listen to Frank all night. I'd have taken the drive down here for that. That's terrific. And I love that because my sobriety date's May 25th, 1979. And by the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship, rooms like this, people like you from South Carolina to Southern California, I haven't been close to a drink in over 20 years. And I am one of those people that never got one day on my own, never got one minute on my own, never got any time until I finally walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I love, I was in a meeting earlier this year, and somebody from Frank's class was 59 was taking a cake. And that's a generation. You know, there's a generation between he and I. And then there's a generation between 79 and somebody in this room tonight. And that's an amazing thing. I think it's one of the nice things about staying in Alcoholics Anonymous is it's a scary thing, too. I mean, in those meetings where you have that countdown and one day they count it down and your hand's up there, the last one, you've got the most time of anybody in the room, scared the heck out of me the first time that ever happened. I liked being in the middle. I liked that around 10 or 12 where there was all those old-timers, all those old farts, excuse my language. Well, you know, being 20, you're not an old-timer. You're just in the old-timer training program. Things where they teach you to say things like, didn't have 12 steps when I got sober, had 36 steps. Didn't have chairs. We sat on rocks. Didn't drink coffee. We drank fungus. It was a hard program. Hard program, yeah. And I got sober in Columbia, South Carolina in 1979, which is nothing like Southern California. I mean, if you really think that Alcoholics Anonymous is really cool and hip and slick because it's on TV shows now, just remember it was invented in Akron, Ohio, 1935. Two guys more conservative than John Birch. Sort of the Chevrolet of spirituality is what it is. You know what I mean? We don't do anything real fancy here. We don't astral project. We don't channel. We get to clean up vomit, really, is what we're real lucky we get to clean up some vomit. And that's the real spirit. That's about as spiritual as it gets here. And I always love to say vomit at an AA meeting because people go, ooh, we get so virginal in sobriety, virginal and rigid. We do. I mean, you know, that. Well, yeah, this is the most rigid organization on the face of the earth. I mean, we want to think we're bohemian and antisocial and the rebels. That's when we're drinking. You take the alcohol out of the alcoholic, we get a little testy. We get just a little, and if you don't think this is true, just, I would suggest do something like join your picnic committee. And then say something like, let's put, you know, I have a good idea, let's put the picnic tables over here this year. It'll get very quiet. The oldest of the old-timers will raise himself up to his 4'2" height and say something like, we don't move the picnic tables at the Founders Group. Bill Wilson sat on that picnic table right over there. Dr. Bob had a little potato salad right there. We don't. I was at a meeting the other day, and it was a nice, La Cañada, a nice adult meeting. You know, in L.A. we have adult meetings, and then there's meetings where, when you're my age, you feel like Ward Cleaver. They all are got long black hair, black leather. They're tattooed and pierced in places on their bodies that I don't even touch on mine. You walk in there looking like you came from the fraternity meeting, and you know they're talking about 9-inch nails, which I thought is what you built your house with, not what you listened to. And but I'll tell you what, yeah, a couple of years ago I had this thing happen. 16 years of sobriety, I married a woman who was having an affair during the marriage ceremony. I'm glad you guys thought that's funny. I guarantee you when you go through it, it's not so funny. No, it was. It's funny now. It's not. No, I don't even know if it's funny now. It's fine. That's a strange thing about AA. You tell stories that other people go, oh, and we laugh. You know? Got a guy down here that talks about being elected most good-looking on the cell block, and people laugh. You know? And then you try to leave out those painful stories. And then, No. Remember when you married and she left you and you were gutted and you didn't know where you were for 4 days? Tell that story. I love that story. It's so funny. I mean, we're like little kids. You try to leave anything out of your pitch. No. Why did you leave that part out? Because I'm bored with it. so bored listening to my story. I want to move on. No, tell that other story. But it was a pretty devastating thing that happened. You know, I call it the bomb going off. I believe in sobriety, the bomb goes off for all of us. Alan McGinnis said it. One of my favorite members of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, died about 20 years before I got sober. It said that, you know, that one day you're going to come to AA and you're going to get everything you ever came to AA to get, or you're going to find out that you're never going to get what you came to AA to get. And then why are you going to stay sober? Because I've got an agenda. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop drinking. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to give up the consequences of drinking. Right? That's what I wanted, to drink and not do this. For those of you on tape, the speaker just shook from head to toe. Come to the meeting next time. I love to fool with the people on tape. Because, you know, they're driving down their car, they're listening to me, oh, they're talking to me. So, that'll teach them. Now, and it's true, I have this agenda. If I could blame somebody, like my parents, for my drinking and stay sober, I'd do it. I'd do that. I just had, remember I told you, Columbia, South Carolina, 1979, a little place there called Fort Jackson. Some of you might have been through there. It's a basic training center. So what that means for the college, white, educated, suburban little boy like me, who's like brand new newcomer, means that all the old-timers are retired sergeant majors with third-grade educations. They don't care about your feelings. They've never had one. Why should you? So if you start coming and talking about coming from an alcoholic family, they'll stick their bony little fingers in your chest and say something like this. If it's your mother's fault you're drinking, Steve, why ain't she waking up sick? You know, for 20 years I've tried to find an answer for that question. If I do, I'm going to find that guy and dig him up, you know? This is why. See, but it just doesn't work. It didn't work coming in here trying to give up the consequences of drinking without drinking. I came in here and I was going to work the 3-day off program. No, actually the 4-day off. I was going to not drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I thought that was incredibly tolerant of myself to do that. And then, of course, I found out that I couldn't do it. There was some judge I heard speak one time, and he said the most brilliant thing. He said it was a judge, and it was just so hard for him to get the fact that the only way to stop drinking was not drinking. Radical concept for me, an alcoholic. No, I mean, those kind of things are radical concepts. The only way to stop drinking is not drink, huh? And we read that all the time. We go wine, beer, we do everything. I did everything, but not drink. Got champagne, beer, didn't drink too much, but not drink. And you won't hear too much from my drunkalogue because I don't have a very interesting one. I have been accused of not having a drunkalogue. I guarantee you I am an alcoholic. I was a morning drinker. I threw up 2 to hold down 1. I never got one day, like I said, before I came to AA. You could read my checks better after I'd had a drink. Right? And I see those heads going, because you need one of those big Ed McMahon checks when you're hungover the next morning, right? Yeah, they can't quite get it here to go write it for your early morning half gallon of wine. But it just seems like there's two kinds of speakers in AA, the ones that usually speak, the ones who are tied down in Folsom doing life, who now run Microsoft. I never went to jail. I'm short. I'm white. In jail, I'm an hors d'oeuvre. I'm not going. And then the other kind of speaker was the guy that woke up in Reno with $100,000 in cash in the suitcase and 12 hookers in the room. That didn't happen. Yes. So, I just sat in my chair and drank, basically. I think if we take out all the plane rides to Acapulco, all the interesting, terrible, horrible, wonderful things that we did while we were drinking, that's probably just most of what happened for most of us. We just, as Norma said, seconds and inches, just sat there and died seconds and inches. One gray, miserable day after one gray, miserable day. And in my case, I believe it was a physical surrender. I just couldn't continue to drink. And so I finally got in my car and took that 3,000-mile ride down to A&A in Columbia, South Carolina, and turned myself in. and my life has never been the same. I've come in here, and I came in May 1st. It was my first meeting. Worked that program I told you about, the 4 days off, 3 days on, for about 3 weeks. Couldn't hack it there, so I surrendered to your guys' program one day at a time. And for me, the spiritual principle of the first step, hopelessness, happened before I got here. I was hopeless. I knew I was going to die of alcoholism. I come from an alcoholic family. Nobody had ever gotten sober in my family as far as I knew. They all died, mostly of suicide, while they were drunk. And I just was so sick that I went down to that clubhouse, and I walked in the door, and the spiritual principle of the second step happened for me, my very first meeting, hope. I walked in, and you people talked like me. And I'd never heard that before. I'd gotten the same advice from non-alcoholics I got from you. Don't drink, go to meetings. Not these meetings, but meetings, you know. Just don't drink. And that's what you guys said. I didn't know how not to do that. It just seemed when I came here, hang out with you, would go out with you with coffee, go home, get back up, come to another meeting. All of a sudden, I had 30 days. You remember that 30-day chip? I still think that one of the greatest miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous is that 30-day chip. It's a, how does that happen? How did I go from drinking every day, you know, either drinking to intoxication or being so sick I had to drink just to get well to get sick enough? Remember that drinking? You're just so sick. You're not drinking to get drunk. You're just drinking to get well. And then you get well on Wednesday and you're going, well, maybe I could drink a little bit more. Because he doesn't forget. He doesn't remember, does he? He just talks to you all the time. He'll use anything in the world. I mean, is this guy still living in your head? Because he lives in mine. I'll just tell you, I'm one of those people, I just have given up on getting well. I'm 20 years sober. I have no hope I will ever get well. I am so hacked to my core, and I could explain to you in detail for a long time why that is. A lot of it's a lot of misinformation. I spent a lot of time trying to get rid of it, but I am just so hacked to my core, I don't really ever think it's going to get healed. And in a way, that's my greatest blessing, because if it could get healed, I think I'd get rid of you people. Because being a member of a home group isn't always the most pleasant activity. Because if you're new, the old-timers in here, let me tell you a little secret. They're alcoholics, too. They may look well, they're not. I've never met an old-timer yet that wasn't hacked somewhere deeply inside of themselves. And on any given day, you might be the one that they take it out on. I mean, my favorite activity when I was new was go to a meeting hoping one old-timer would get in a fist fight with another old-timer about the punctuation in the big book. They don't do that anymore. But I remember, you know, old-timers trying to hit each other with their walkers. You know, come here. Now what Bill meant. I talked to him about it. Come here. And it's a wonderful, like I said, it's the most rigid organization on the face of the earth. I was up in La Cañada, and this, they were giving out chips. It was a noon meeting, really a much older crowd compared to most of the meetings in L.A. And they were giving out chips, and there was this nice little lady. She's probably about 45, 55, something down the front row. And they said, anybody have 30 days? And she had 29, but I guess she was a little codependent or whatever. She just wanted to take a chip to make the group happy. So she raised her hand, and she said, I got 29 days. Can I take a 30-day chip? You just thought she farted. My God, these people, they freaked out. No, you can't take a 30-day chip. You'll go blind, and we'll all get boils and plaques, and you'll die. And locking the animal fall of pieces. This from a group of people who went out Halloween for a pack of cigarettes, didn't come back till Valentine's Day, but God forbid this woman take a chip 1 second early. Well, thank Walt for having me down here. Hey, Walt said, go ahead, talk as long as you want. I'll never do that in an AA meeting. Never do that. I want to know what time the AA meeting stops, okay? Because I don't care if I had 5 minutes. I'm stopping when it's time to stop. I did that one time. This is a group of people, right? We went into the bar. I'm only going to have one drink. 4 days later. But have you ever tried to go over 5 minutes in an AA meeting? They start doing this. Where's your humility, pal? Very interesting little group of people we have here. So the other part about being an elder, got to be a little careful, because we're an organization. If you're an elder, we don't care what you did. We'll pat you on the back. You robbed the bank and you didn't drink? God, you're spiritual. You know? So so sometimes when you get time, they'll just ask you to talk no matter what kind of program you work, just because you get time, you know? And I just, like I said, I love being in that middle. What I mean by I'm so hacked is I have to be special just to be okay. Do you understand what I mean? You know what I mean? If I'm just like okay, I'm not okay. I'm like less than if I'm okay. I got to be special to be okay. That's why I have a problem with this thing that God loves you as much as he loves me. That bothers me. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad he loves you. I'm happy about that. I just want him to love me this much more, all right? King David, Steve Fortner, these are my favorites right here. Because I got to be special, see? And that's true. I found the same God here. Nothing I can do to get him to love me anymore. Nothing I can do to get him to love me any less. Don't even know if he loves me because of me. Maybe he just loves me because of who he is. Now, that's great because it takes all the performance out of it. And I have performed my whole life. I'm one of those guys that went out on a date. The first half of the date, I'm trying to figure out what you want. Second half of the date, I'm trying to be it. Yeah, like you haven't done that. But I'm just too small to be the big tough guy, right? You know, it talks about that in the book. There's two kinds of people that try to get their way, one of two ways, either dominating or being kind. I'm the kind one. I'm the nice one. I'm the one while you're on the Harley with Guido, I'm talking to your mother. So when he breaks your heart, I'm just there, sure, we can talk. Come on. But it's just a way to get what I want. I was never nice to be nice. I was never just kind because that's the thing every human being on the face of the earth deserves. I was kind because it got me what I wanted. And if it didn't get me what I wanted, then I wasn't kind anymore. It talks about in the 12 and 12. We never looked at character building for character building's sake. We always used everything to get what we want. And I'll tell you, I think that in my case, the reason that was is I just, because of this hackedness that I have, just didn't believe anybody would ever give me anything. No? And if you don't believe that you're worthy of being given anything, then there's only one to it. Take it. Not big enough to take it, so I got to manipulate it. I got to find some way to schmooze it out of you, right? And so one of the problems with being an Alcoholics Anonymous is they take away all your coping skills. I mean, the things you guys call character defects, those were my life goals. So this restoring to sanity and this, I mean, it's a stupid program. It really is a stupid program. If you're new, this is a stupid program. I'll tell you, one of the ways it's stupid is you're going to have to go through Thanksgiving and Christmas with nothing stronger than M&Ms. And anybody you saw take a birthday cake had a bad Halloween the year they got sober. That's why they're in this first week in November. Yeah. Probably woke up in their costume like November 5th. Because you know you don't wake up like the 1st and go to a meeting. You wake up the 5th of November, you're still in that costume that's like, you know, the nun on the front, the hooker on the back going, where am I? What happened? That's what I don't understand why. You know the birthday I do not understand in AA, December 31st. How does that happen? How the hell could you not drink one more day? It's December 31st. Who says, no, I'm going to get sober tonight? You know, I understand January 5th. That's an alcoholic birthday, right? Because that's when you came to, the 5th of January. That's when the New Year's party ended for you. And I guess the only thing you can say about that is when it's your time, it's your time. You know, we're all here by invitation and appointment. And I can't tell you why the people who aren't here, I can't tell you why my mother didn't make it, I can't tell you why my grandfather just was never exposed to it. I can't tell you why people better than me have died drunk. You know? It says in the big book, in the second foreword, it says that those who came and really tried, because there's sometimes we hear those, we don't do as well a job as we used to do, and I got to tell you, my experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people I know that came in here and do the basic program, get a sponsor, do the steps, get a commitment, try to help somebody. Basic program, nothing fancy about that. See, my head always wants a fancy program. Autumn tones in my 4th step. No. Of those people, I probably know 95% of those are still sober. It says that those who came in and really tried, see, that's the key word, really tried. 50% get sober right away, 25% get better after a while, and then there's a 25% who get better. But what's scary about that last 25% is they're really trying. The book defines them as really working a program. It's not the people who come in here and sit and get their court card signed or just come in here and try to absorb it. There are people in here really doing the program, and they don't get sober. So I can't explain it to you. I'm not one of those people who've ever been able to live in the comfort that everything's exactly where it should be. And I don't say that to be controversial. In fact, I wish I could believe that. You know, and if you believe that, God bless you. I'm just saying, and I say that because I don't believe it. I look at the newspaper and go, there's some stuff is dreadfully wrong around here. And I say that because for 20 years, I've been able to live with that tension that there's a loving God and some really crappy stuff happens and not drink over it. Not drink over the confusion that I have about life. And I heard a guy talk the other day, and it's true. God's a mystery to me. I mean, he just is a mystery. There's a lot I understand, a lot I don't understand, but I don't think I'm supposed to work it all out. And my brain wants to work it all out so I can rub God's big belly. He'll come out and grant me 3 wishes. See, I'm not on a spiritual quest to understand. I'm on a spiritual quest to control. Because I didn't come in looking for God. I came in thinking I was God. And on any given day, I'm still disappointed. I'm not. I'd like to put that on the 20 questions. Would you like to be Pope of Alcoholics Anonymous for a day? The answer is no, you're not an alcoholic. Everybody in this room wants to be a Pope of Alcoholics, just to put the bad alcoholics in stocks for a while, you know? If I was Pope, I'd have the alcoholics whose programs I don't like out in front of meetings in stocks. Bad program, right? God forbid that they're sober and not driving drunk, you know, and then just in here misquoting the big book, saying things like to the wise rather than to wise, but I want to put them in the socks. The other lie they tell you in AA, then they do lie to you newcomers. They do. Oh, they lie. I lie. They lie. We lie. We do. We're liars. We just lie for good reason now. Save somebody's life. Alabama's my spiritual grandmother. Big lie she always told. You're not a bad person trying to get good. You're a sick person trying to get well. Lie. I mean, it is a lie. Because if it's not a lie, then how come we got to do a moral inventory? If I'm a sick person trying to get well rather than a bad person, how come I got to do a moral inventory? Last time I looked, people with sugar diabetes weren't doing moral inventories, you know? Last time I looked, people with heart disease weren't going, Fred, when you were out of town, I slept with Ethel, I won't ever do it again. No. Alcoholics are doing moral inventories. Because, you see, I did nothing to get alcoholism. I was born in a family. I drank. I watched people solve the problems by doing this. And I don't even know if I'd been adopted out into a non-alcoholic family. I think the first time I hit that beer, my biological clock would have kicked in, and I would have become an alcoholic just because it's in my genetic makeup. So there ain't no morals about that. But I'll tell you what was moral, what I did when I was drinking. Driving drunk is a moral choice. See? And it may have not been moral when I was drinking, but it is for me today, because I came in this room and you people taught me what was wrong with me. You taught me I had a physical allergy and a mental obsession. That if I took that first drink, I was going to set up a phenomenon of craving that nothing on this good earth would stop. I mean, if you read this book, we have a radical definition of alcoholism. I mean, it says in there that there's a certain kind of heavy drinker who might die a few years early from drinking, but he's not an alcoholic. Excuse me? Most people out there would think he's an alcoholic. Most mental health professionals would call him an alcoholic. Not us. He's just a wussy drinker who couldn't take it. Had to die. Couldn't take a few good drinks. See? No. For us, definition of alcoholism and within it's all on the line. One more drink and you're going to drop dead, pal. One more drink, your kids will never talk to you again. One more drink, your job of 30 years is out the door. One more drink and we're going to take your car, your house, your chihuahua, everything you own. One more drink and man, boom, you take the drink. That's alcoholism according to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's alcoholism according to what I've got. You know, a little drink you cost me my wife, my car, my job, my kids, my self-respect. Every good, loving, kind thing I ever had in my life. Give you one more chance. It's awful quiet when I do that. your sphincter got a little tighter. Beads of sweat start to go, you know? That's the difference between me and the non-alcoholic. I take 2, 3, 12 ounces of ethyl alcohol. It hits my stomach, the sun rises. Paralyzes my legs, comes up my chest, flushes my face, comes out my fingers, and every pore in my body goes, ah. You know? They take a drink, they go, huh. You know? I mean, I know this because I got addicted to antique stores in sobriety. And in antique stores, I found shot glasses. Do you know about these? You do? I didn't know about these shot glasses. You know what the concept of a shot glass is? Let me explain this to you. A shot glass is what a non-alcoholic uses to make sure they don't get too much alcohol in their drink. Because by God, if that recipe calls for an ounce, you don't want one drop more, do you? And they think we're bizarre. And I don't see the problem. If the recipe calls for an ounce, anybody can free pour an ounce, right? For those of you on tape, to hell with you. You don't know what I'm doing. Right? But you know. We're going to do something in sobriety if you're new, like make non-alcoholic friends someday. And you'll do something lame rather than go out with them and vomit on yourself. Again, that word vomit. And remember, vomit used to be important to us. It was the artistic part of the evening when we were Picasso. Or we had a friend that threw up and we took care of them. Again, there's that, oh, you'll listen, there's a frog out there. Now, I'm not a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. I've never met a drug alcohol couldn't help, okay? Percodan goes better with beef feeders, all right? Sorry. Any drug, I've done drugs, I've abused drugs, but I'm not a drug addict. You know, any drug that got in the way of my alcohol went. And I say that not to be controversial, but simply to say this. There may still be some pure drug alcoholics in here. I'm pretty much a pure alcoholic. I just want you to know that that's okay, too. And if you're a drug addict, alcoholic, drug addict, alcoholic, necrophiliac, whatever you are, you know, as long as that alcoholic is in here, you belong, okay? I have no problem with that either. But I'll tell you what. See, I am, according to the book, with drug use, what we would call a heavy drinker. If it got in my way, I put it down. Couldn't do that with alcohol. See, it didn't matter what was on the line. See, if I could have done with alcohol what it is drugs, I'd have never needed Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol does for me what I cannot do for myself. And I should have never had any trouble with a higher power, although I did, and I want to talk about that, because I had one before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was alcohol. It might made life livable, or it made me forget about the parts of life that made life unlivable. It made me feel whole. It made me feel complete. It took away the fear before it gave me the fear. I think it says in one of the stories in the big book, alcohol gave me wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. You know? But that flying part, we can still fly. We can fly just a little bit. I mean, he talks to me. He says, you're a very good person. You're a very good person. You've got 20 years. You can have just one drink. Let's just have one drink. Let's just have one drink. I tell you what, let's stop going to meetings. Because you don't need meetings after 20 years. You can say something. Well, stay home and watch the Lakers. And then when that beer commercial comes on, I can talk to you about it. Without interference from your sponsor who keeps contradicting me. Yeah. They have a lot of alcohol out there that I haven't tasted. I know you've been. Zima. What's a Zima? What is a Zima? Only alcohol I've ever seen fascinate old-timers. I've actually seen an old-timer with a newcomer, and the newcomer saying, show me how to work the steps he's selling. You tell me about a Zima, I'll show you how to do the steps. Or you'll go, what's a dry beer? How can it be dry? Wet and dry, 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 wet and dry. The Rain Man of demons. Very good drinker, very good drinker, very good drinker. 5 minutes of Jack Daniels, 5 minutes of Jack Daniels. You know, and just, and if you're new, he's talking to you like this. He's saying something like, all right, you got 90 days. You better drink soon or you're going to get so much time you can never drink again. Oh, God. See, and I know if I ever, you're a very good person, you have one drink. If I ever took that drink, you're a very good person, have one drink, take the drink, bam, you rotten loser, you. You just threw away 20 years of sobriety, now drink your miserable self to death. And if I could ever get them around in front of me, I'd go, you guys are not consistent. And they go, we don't care. We don't like you. Our job's to kill you. Why shouldn't we lie to you? Why do you talk to us rather than your sponsor? So, if you're new in here feeling, why is my head still going off at 90 days? Mine still goes off at 20 years sometimes. It just isn't very strong. I've never paid attention to it, you know? I had somebody call me up a couple years ago and said, we want you to speak at a conference. Right? And one of the conferences was in Monterey, and one of the conferences was in Fresno. And I said, thank you very much for letting me be of service. I appreciate it. Thank the committee. Hung up the phone, and boom. Fresno, huh? That's the duty conference. If you were a really good speaker, they'd have you in Monterey. See, I mean, he will take away any good thing in my life. If it's good, it's got to be better. If it's not there, then why did they get it? I'll tell you, I don't know about you, but sometimes one of the struggles for me in sobriety is sitting there and that stuff Alan McGinnis said, that stuff that you've always wanted, you're not getting it, and some mook with 90 days just walked in and he's got it all. And you go, what about me? Haven't I been good? Didn't I do it? I'm out there. What is this guy? None of your business. None of your business. That's what I keep being told. None of my business. There's an old story about that. It's this story about a guy who owned a farm, and he was hiring some farm workers, and he hired a bunch of guys about 8 o'clock in the morning and said, I'll pay you $45 for the day at work. And they're all out there working, and about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he decided he needed some other people to work on the farm, and so he went out and got some other people and paid them $45. Of course, the alcoholic who started working at 7 o'clock in the morning had a little resentment about this and went up to the farmer and said, how come I started at 7, I'm getting $45, he started at 3 o'clock in the morning, he's getting $45, that's not fair. And the farmer said, whose money is it? My money. So when I've turned my will and my life over to the care of, you know, maybe what I'll get to do is be the best coffee maker. Maybe what I'll get to do is be the best big book bringer. I don't know, but I know that I believe that the difference between me and somebody else that got sober May 25th, 1979, who's either drunk or dead tonight, is one day they were asked to surrender something that was good, maybe, in order to stay sober, and they just weren't willing to do it. They weren't willing to surrender their meeting. Ever get a meeting you thought was your meeting? I was secretary of a meeting for a year and a half. It was a year commitment. I took it over at 6 months. They reelected me. Never do this, okay? Never be secretary for longer than the term, because all of a sudden Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, all the people who live up here want to take over the meeting. It becomes your meeting somehow. And at the end of that half a year, that was my meeting, you know? And I would sit there, because it was a 12-step and 12-tradition meeting. They do all right on the 12 steps, but when we got to traditions, I don't know about you, when you got some time, all of a sudden those tradition meetings, they're not talking about the traditions, and you're sitting there going, bad meeting. It's a bad meeting. What are they doing to my meeting? Now, you remember when you were sober, newly sober, it didn't matter what they did at a meeting, they were all good meetings, you remember that? In fact, the worse the meeting it was, the better you liked it, the more controversy and talk. But I don't know, now that I'm old, I just want a quiet meeting, everybody just talk on the subject, we'll go home, okay? Nobody will get hurt. Unfortunately, there's new people keeping coming into the program. Oh, what a surprise. So I'll be sitting there going, they're not talking about the traditions at my meeting. About which time God will hit me upside the head and go, whose meeting is it, Steve? Mine. Whose meeting? All right, it's yours and mine. All right, it's your meeting. Is anybody drinking in this meeting? No. Is everybody kind of doing the best they can in this meeting? Yes. If you need to talk to somebody in love after the meeting, can you do that? Yes. Yeah. Are the guys you sponsor behaving well in the meeting? Yes. Then will you shut up? Okay. You know, I mean, and that's the only way I know how to stay a worker among worker, a friend among friends. And that's really all I ever want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, is a worker among worker, a friend among friends. I'll take the lead when I have to, and then I just want to sit in that seat and just be one of them. Just one of them. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do after you get some time. If you're new, I'll just tell you, welcome to the holiday season in Alcoholics Anonymous. Get right in a relationship. All the guys I know that get in relationships, they do their step work much better. Relationships I know just lubricate step work. They really do. Most of the guys I know that get in relationships know nothing about women. At least from the feedback. I don't know that I know. I know that we're very different. I was at my home group the other day, and there was a woman, just the classiest lady you want to know. I mean, this woman is just terrific. But she was sharing, and I'm not sure why she shared this particular meeting, but she shared that she really bottomed out sexually in sobriety when she found herself having sex on the back of a motorcycle in an alley behind a bar, sober. Now, all the women kind of went, oh, yeah, we understand. They hugged her, and they were very solemn and very moved and tearful. The men, on the other hand, were thinking. I have a Suzuki. Anyone who would like to bottom out after the meeting, I can just be a trusted servant, you know? So when you put those two together in a sober little club place, you know, it's going to be kind of, doop. I really was. I was on one of these things that we were talking. It was a cruise. And, you know, after 2 days, because you sit at the same people on the dinner with the cruise, so after 2 days, then all the discussion is scatological. I mean, it's just sex. But these two people were dating. And this is the thing. Sponsors, you have to be careful. His sponsor said, don't get in a relationship, just have sex in the first year. And her sponsor said, don't get in a relationship, which meant no sex for the first year, right? And so they're just batting their heads against each other, get it back to the sponsors when it really was the sponsors who needed to sit down and had a little discussion. So my guys, you know, it's new information for my guys if I tell them don't call her bitch when you start an argument. You know, that's new information for my guys. That's quantum physics for the guys I sponsor. And they look at you surprised. They go, really? I shouldn't say that? Well, if I don't say that, what would I call her? Well, how about dear or honey? That'll work, really? You never know when relationships are going to get dangerous. I was seeing a woman, and she said one time, you want to come over? We were going to go to Cancun. She said, I'm going to go try on some bathing suits. Would you like to come watch? And you're like, help me pick out the suits. I thought, well, this sounds like fun. Nothing dangerous about that right off the bat, right? You know, it's like a little private strip show, you know? I get to go over there and watch her try on swimsuits and see her cute little body, and then when she's behind the curtains, look at the other girls, and like you guys don't, right? Whenever I tell that story, people are, not me, honey. When you're behind the curtain, I go blind. So we get in the car to go over to the mall, and I don't know what happened between my house and the mall, but this woman gained 400 pounds. Because all of a sudden she's behind that curtain, and I mean, there's green smoke coming out, and all I'm hearing is, fat cellulite, I hate it. All of a sudden, she sticks her cute little head out with like four bathing suits going, which one do you think I look best in? And I don't know why I feel my life is at stake, but just a little cautious. And so I go, you know, I know black, basic black makes you look okay. So I go, well, I think you look really good in the black one, honey. And she says, what, do I look fat in the blue one? Well, I know, I'm a man, I know anytime the woman you're with, if she says fat, just put the bullet right through your head, because there's no way out. No matter what you say, you're a dead in the water. Don't even try to explain. Just, just get out of that, you know? And but I'm trying, you know, I'm just, no, honey, you look great in the blue one. What, are you an idiot? You know I've gained some weight. You know I've gained pounds. I'm going, all right, maybe you have gained a little weight. Ah, you said I was fat. You said I was fat. I think I'm going to go to the Craftsman sale and hit myself with the... So, you know, I just... It says in the 12 and 12. It says in the 12 and 12, defective relationships with other people, the primary cause of my problems, including my alcoholism, that I don't know how to get along with God or man. I only know how to dominate or be buried underneath. And you guys, I've come in here, and I have a home group, had a home group for 14 years, had to change it, went to another home group, You guys have taught me how to play well with others. You guys have taught me how to go into a meeting and try, as best I can, to make the meeting as good for you as it is for me. You've taught me, and I can't do this all the time, to walk into a room, and my definition of spiritual maturity is to walk in here and feel no better and no worse than anybody in the room. To simply feel like a peer, an equal. And I always had to be doing something special to be special, or I had to always be less than. Now, and it says in the book that we talk about our recovery, and it also says that we talk about how we formed and maintain and improve this relationship with this higher power. And I just want to talk about that for a little bit. I came in here hopeless. I came in here knew I was done. And I walked in here and I got the spiritual principle of the second step, hope. And for me, I was restored to sanity. Not that moment, but I was restored to sanity in this sense. Sometimes I think that gets very misquoted in meetings I go to. Sanity, as far as I can tell from this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, has nothing to do with the fact that I can't keep a job or I don't know how to have relationships. I get very skeptical that there's anything like an alcoholic personality. Now, I don't think you can really back that up with the book. The book talks about there are many kinds of alcoholics. The doctor's opinion says there's a whole bunch of kinds of alcoholics. That's my problem with the program when I first got here was I was going, there's no real program. There's not. My sponsor kept going, just wait a minute, there's a program. And I think what I was mistaking is we just come at it from such different angles. And it looks like we're like the 10 blind men with the elephant. You know, one of us has got the trunk and one of us has got the leg, and we can't see the whole thing. And so I came in here, and I met you guys, and you were sober, and I had hope, and finally I got some sober hope that I could stay sober, and I was going along fine. I was just happy. The group was my higher power, but, you know, I've always been encouraged to do the steps, and so I started looking at that third step, and then we run into that gahahad word for the first time. You know. Now, actually, like I said, there shouldn't be any problem, because I had a God. It was alcohol, and alcohol is a pimp. Alcohol is a pimp, and everybody in this room was his boy or his girl. Yeah. Alcohol said, you know, I know it's Thanksgiving, and you got to get to your mom's house for dinner, but you know what? Get in the car, and where's my money? And I know the kids need some presents, and you've saved that money for a year, but we got to go do some drinking, so get in the car, and where's my money? I know it's New Year's, and you really had intended to be down at your church for New Year's to celebrate YK2, but get in the car, and where's my money? Then when we get sent to A&A by some nice judge or counselor or PO officer or somebody who actually cares, alcohol becomes very white, starts talking to us. I love you, baby. I'm so sorry. You know, I didn't mean to hurt you, baby. I'll be good to you this time. I'll be good to you, baby. You know, and then we get back there and say, get in the car and where's my money? I mean, that's the kind of God. I did an 11-step for the last year of my drinking every morning. I was down there throwing up two to hold down one. So come in here and you have this loving God concept, which took me a long time and still takes me some time to get in contact with. But my problem was this. I grew up in an alcoholic home. Now, when I say that, I have to qualify that a lot. I'm not blaming anybody. You know, my mother didn't ask for alcoholism. My grandfather didn't ask for alcoholism. My father didn't ask for alcoholism. They got this disease just like I did. Sometimes they didn't do very well with it, but you know what? They didn't have a lot of information. And a lot of really crazy stuff happened in my family, and you know what? That's just what happens when people drink. And recovering from my own disease has done so much for me to understand what happened to me when I was growing up. I'm going to tell you, I understand people who said, you know what? Nobody in my family's alcoholic, and I became alcoholic. You understand people like me said, I come out of an alcoholic family and I'm an alcoholic. And the ones I don't understand is I came out of an alcoholic family and it has nothing to do with my drinking. I just don't get that. Apple trees make apples. You know? You know, you want to make an alcoholic, grow up in an alcoholic family, it helps. You know? You got the biology and you got the behavior. You know? I was young, I wasn't stupid. Now, the problem with that is my mom was the alcoholic, but you know, and I grew up in this kind of strange alcoholic family. I always had food on the table, always had clean clothes. My mother was the life of the party. Nobody stayed away from my house. They loved my mother. But when she was hungover or drunk or depressed, it was a whole different world. Many times at 16, I would walk in from a date. My mother would be on the couch, passed out from alcohol and librium, plastic bag over her head, trying to commit suicide. And I would simply take the bag off her head and go to bed, having no idea what I felt. Now, my father was a command sergeant major, greatest man I ever met. And yet, he didn't and couldn't do anything about this little alcoholic. Now, what that created for me was when I got to the third step, you guys called this God Father, and now my father is a great man, but the fact is he was simply ineffective in this area of his life. So I didn't think that there was God out there trying to get me. I just thought if I turned my will and my life over to the care of, he wouldn't do anything. It says abandon yourself, utterly abandon yourself. Abandon it. For me, as you're 5 years old, you're on the side of the pool, your parents in the pool going, jump, I'll catch you, you're in midair and you can't swim. That's abandonment. If nobody's there, you're dead. Now, if you're five, the drunk parent's going, catch up, catch you. You're not going to jump to that one. You're five, you're not stupid. But the other one looks pretty good. So you go, jump, I'll catch you, but I got to take care of your mother. Ploosh. Over and over and over again. And one of the greatest gifts that this program has given me is when I came in here, I simply turned my will and my life over the care of. And for me, that simply meant I was going to do the fourth step. That's all it meant. And after I did 11 and got to 12, the book said I would have had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. That's all it meant. There was no person or deity or thing or power. There were simply the steps and the process. And it worked. And I got to tell you, I think one of the things that I want to never give up is that amazement I used to have with God. You know, and sometimes I get so used to the miracles. This is going to be a miracle season. There are people who are going to come in here, and they're just going to be nuts. And in 30 days, they're going to be sober. They're going to be sober for their first Christmas. There's going to be people who go through their first Thanksgiving. It's a season of miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can get used to them. And a guy asked me to lead a meeting on We the Agnostics, and I said, I'm not a very good leader for that because I have such a strong belief and such a specific belief about God. I'm not really a good person to lead. He said, I want you to lead the meeting. All right, I'll take the commitment. And so I went to the concordance, and I just looked up God, and I had forgotten what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says about God. It says there's a God in this book that restores. There's a God in this book that makes possible. There's a God in this book that saves me from my feelings. There's a God in this book that can trust. There's a God in this book that judges. I'm not so happy about that. There's a God in this book that helps. There's a God in this book that directs. There's a God in this book that inspires. There's a God in this book that disciplines. Again, not one of my favorite. There's a God in this book that solves. There's a God in this book that removes. I mean, that's some powerful stuff. And I got to thank the newcomer, because when I watch God work in the amazing chaos of your life when you come in here and restore it to some kind of order, I remember one more time he's doing it in my life. I remember one more time. Maybe I don't have the big drama. Maybe some of the problems seem smaller or more intense, or maybe I think I'm supposed to do more rather than surrender and be willing and be still and know that he is God. But that's the kind of God that I still need the steps to keep freshly in my life every day, that there is a God that is that active over and over again. See, one of my unfavorite phrases in AA is, if you're having a problem with God, think what kind of problems God's having with you. Don't like that phrase. God's not having any problem with me, okay? I mean, it's not like God had a great day till I got up. Oh, Steve Bordner's up. I need a Valium now. I'm sorry. You know. Now, it just makes God into my mother one more time. No, God doesn't have any problems with me. If there's any problems, I'm the one that has a problem with him. Don't always like the way he runs his world, but you know what? The kingdom of God is not a democracy. I don't get to vote on it. I'm the kind of guy that wants to vote on everything. And so I must tell you that kind of peace of mind, that when I married that woman and had the affair, you know, ultimately I had to simply turn over the justice of all that situation to him, because she took from me what she could not return, my trust. And I finally had to say, she doesn't have to give it to back. If you're going to help, if I'm going to trust again, God, it's up to you to give that back to me, because she can't do anything about it. You know? And I must tell you, it's one of the greatest blessings I've had. I want to thank you for having me come down here. If you think speaking is really like one of those great, it is. It's a wonderful thing to do. But come ride with me for another 3 hours back to L.A., you know? I mean, it's not a very important commitment. It's like being Tony Curtis in Spartacus. I mean, it's just not very important. You know, in Spartacus, they're all fighting the Roman Empire, and then they're killer buff gladiator guys, and then there's Tony Curtis. They say, what do you do? He goes, I'm a singer of songs. And they go, great, good. When the Romans give us the hot land enema, you can hit the high notes. Greatest singer of songs. No, the real workers here are the people who take down the meeting, the people who make the coffee, the people. Just thank them. Would you thank them? I mean, they do such a great job, and we're not a group of people who tend to thank people for being consistently good. We tend to just call them when they're wrong. You know, and to thank the people that set up this meeting, the guy that's going to be putting the chairs away and some newcomer wants to go to Denny's for 12 putts of coffee tonight, you know. Those are the, and if anything I've said makes that possible, if any part of my story encourages that, if we've just laughed enough to get enough endorphins going that we feel like going one more day, you know, then it's all worth it. And I'm so honored and privileged to come down here and spend some time trying to give back a little bit, and never can, of what AA has given me. I will close with the story I always close with because it says that people tell me it helps. It's your story now. Story about this third step. There's a drunk. He's on his way home. He's been drinking. He's hung out. He's tore up. He's on his way home, and he runs into God. God's got something in his hand. The drunk goes, hey, what's that? And God goes, this is sobriety. And the drunk goes, wow, how much does that cost? God goes, well, how much you got? And the drunk goes, well, I got about $50. And God goes, okay, all right, for you, sobriety costs $50. And the drunk goes, wait a minute, if I give you all $50, then I won't have any gas for my car. And God goes, oh, you have a car? Oh, well, sobriety is going to cost you your car. He says, wait a minute, if I give you my car, how will I get to my job? God goes, oh, you have a job. Oh, no, no, no. Sobriety costs you your job. He says, wait a minute, if I give you my job, how will I pay for my house? A home. You have a home. Oh, my goodness, I thought you were in the cardboard box down by the railroad tracks. No, 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 no. Sobriety costs you your home. He says, if I give you my home, what about my wife and my kids? A family. You have, my list about you is totally out of date. No, no, no. Sobriety costs you your family. He says, well, if I give you all that, what good is my life? And God goes, that's right. Sobriety is going to cost you your life. And the drunk, because he's just willing, and he's at that magic moment of surrender, gives God his money and his car and his house and his wife, gives his father his life. His daddy gives him sobriety. And he looks him deep in the eye and he says, all right, I'm going to give you your money back. It's not your money, it's my money, but you're going to spend it for me. Give you your car back. It's not your car anymore. It's my car. You get to drive it for me. I'm going to give you your job back. Not your job anymore. It's my job. You get to work it for me. I'll give you your house back. It's not your house anymore. It's my home, but you're going to live in it for me. I'm going to give you your wife and your kids back, you know, but based on your behavior, they have no right never to talk to you again, but I'm going to give them back to you because it's not your family anymore. It's my family. You're going to take care of them for me. I'm going to give you your life back, and it's never your life ever again. It's my life, and you're going to live it for me. I believe that's the deal that God cuts with all of us in the third step. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship, rooms like this, people like you, I am so grateful that I encountered a loving God who was willing to make that kind of deal with a spiritually bankrupt alcoholic dying of terminal alcoholism, just waiting for oblivion, who can today tell you that among men, I am most richly blessed. Thank you for letting me share.
We hope you have enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies of this CD, a catalog which contains other AA and Al-Anon tapes and CDs, or to find out about our Tape of the Month Club, call Encore at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.